Greetings, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. Delighted to have you all listening as we count down the end of the summer almost and the fall sports soon will be here before you know it. But we have a great episode today as we talk to someone who's very much involved in the summer sports, and that is Will Carafello, Director of Social Media for the New York Mets. Really great to pick his brain working behind the scenes of one of the biggest baseball teams in the country. And he also talks a little about his history, coming from the New Jersey Devils, the Izod Center up there, the Prudential Center up in the Northeast. So really good conversation to come with Will Carafello. But before we get to our interview, we have this episode's helpful tool. And this episode's helpful tool is a free app, so you can download it for iOS or Android, and it will come in handy any time that you want to be able to post to Instagram but don't have a photo that is properly it meets the image specifications, meaning it's basically square. So all you do is download this app, import your rectangular or otherwise irregularly shaped photo, and it will let you place it within a preset border that is ready-made for Instagram. You can also do a little bit of cropping using the app. You can change and adjust the color of the border, the look of the border, the look and feel of what you're spitting out to Instagram. But all in all, a very simple, a free, ad-free tool that will let you instantly take any photo you have on your phone and get it ready for Instagram. Get so it's a perfect square so that it shows up when you go to load. So it's a small problem that people encounter a lot in their everyday day-to-day work when posting on Instagram, but the Square Ready app has a solution to the small problem. So go to your app store, download the Square Ready app, and start using it today to take care of those photos that aren't quite already ready for Instagram. Trust me, it's helpful, it's free, and it's this episode's helpful tool. All right, hope you enjoy this episode's helpful tool. We'll be right back for a great discussion with Will Carafello of the New York Mets. All right, that was this episode's helpful tool. It's called Square Ready. Easy way to get a photo instantly good to go for Instagram sharing. I don't know if our guest today has ever heard of it. We're here with Will Carafello, Director of Social Media with the New York Mets. Will, do you know anything about the Square Ready app?
No, it's the first I've heard of it, so definitely something I'll check out.
Yeah, if you're ever stuck with one of those rectangular photos that Instagram just won't do, it's a good little quick tool for you. But
very cool.
We are delighted, really excited for this episode today. You know, not every day to talk to someone that's heads up social media for a major league baseball team, and we have Will Carafello, Director of Social Media with New York Mets. Welcome to the podcast, Will.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
So, Will, like I said, you've been working with the Mets now for a short time, but really is hit the ground running there. But as we do with all of our guests, give us a little idea about where you come from, or your career path, how you got started, any tips along the way as well. People also like to emulate you and work in sports and social.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I've had a fantastic career path. I mean, you know, from college, I knew I wanted to work in sports. I was really hoping to be an athlete, but too short to play basketball, not strong enough to play football, so I had to find another way into the industry. So I was pretty good at business, and, you know, I'd worked for a point-of-purchase marketing company while I was in high school during the summers, and, you know, really liked marketing. So I felt like that was a good career path for me. I went to Seton Hall, graduated from Seton Hall. I actually started at Ocean County College because I wasn't exactly sure what I wanted to do and didn't want to, you know, jump into a four-year college. So I used that as a opportunity to grow for a couple of years. Transferred over to Seton Hall, and that has a fantastic sports management program. You know, set one real goal is just to get a job by the time I had graduated in the 2 years that I was there. So, you know, shortly while I was there, probably after my first semester, I got a internship with Madison Square Garden in the group sales department. You know, I dropped my resume off at the Dropbox they had on campus at a career fair, and didn't expect to get a call. Ended up getting a call. Unfortunately, I was too salesy on the phone call. I worked myself right into the group sales department. As much as I try to pitch, I was a marketing person. I got the interview with group sales, ended up getting the internship and started there. As soon as I walked into that building, I knew this is what I wanted to do for the rest of my life. I was very fortunate. I turned a one semester internship into a 16-month internship. So I maybe had to forge a paper or two, which I won't tell Seton Hall or the Garden for that matter. But I was able to stay there. It was just something where I knew this is what I wanted to do, with the rest of my life. So, being able to start at Madison Square Garden was literally a dream come true. So, spent 16 months there. Unfortunately, towards the end of my internship, they were on a hiring freeze, so I couldn't get the full-time job in group sales as I had hoped for. And I highly recommend to anyone who is out there looking for a job, don't do what I did. I sent out one, I filled out one application or sent my resume to one place, and I got the job. It was with the Newark Bears, a very humbling position going from Madison Square Garden, the world's most famous arena, working on, some major events, big concerts, like we had the Who while I was there, Prince, we had the Grammys, a ton of big events, not to mention, Knicks and Rangers, and obviously all the huge events that come through there. To now going to minor league baseball. And for anyone who's worked in minor league baseball, it is, you do it all. So my job was ticket sales and, I'm on the phone, making my calls every day and, trying to sell tickets, but I'm also counting out the vendors every night, and I'm, everything from picking up garbage to pulling the tarp on and off the field, and then later that day you're in a meeting to try to sell some sponsorship. So, if you asked me when I was in that position, I probably would have told you I'd trade this for anything in the world. But looking back, it was definitely a really good experience, and gave me the opportunity to kind of see how everything is done. So, kind of a quick crash course on how all these other departments work. This is kind of my catchphrase, but I was only with the Newark Bears for 6 months, and then I got a call from Madison Square Garden. They reached out to me mentioning that there was a position that was going to be available, marketing coordinator for sports properties. And I'm pretty sure that they weren't going around calling up every intern that worked there. So my catchphrase is we've all heard the saying, it's not what you know, it's who you know. I'm going to take that a step further. It's not who you know, it's who knows you. So obviously, I made a pretty good impact while I was at the Garden. That they reached out to me and said, hey, we've got this position available. You should come and interview for it. And I did interview for the job. Ended up getting the job and going back to Madison Square Garden. As a marketing coordinator for the sports properties department, which handles all the other sporting events, the non-Knicks, Rangers, and Liberty. So the Millrose games, the college basketball, the boxing, all the other sporting events that come into the building that are not, a team sport. So, it's kind of like being a part of a team that changes every year. So it was definitely a fun experience. Spent a couple years doing that, and then one of the properties that I worked on was the Harlem Globetrotters, and my marketing person there was leaving, she was starting a family and couldn't be traveling, so she called me up, said, hey, I'm leaving, it's been fun working with you, oh, by the way, would you like to interview for this job? And at the time, much younger than I am today, I thought it would be a cool opportunity. At the time, I really had no intention of leaving the Garden. I had every intention of staying there for my entire career. But I interviewed with the Globetrotters, went out to Arizona, first time I'd ever been to Arizona, and ended up getting the job and, thought it would be a cool opportunity. So I ended up, traveling the world with the Globetrotters. Another good experience because at that point I'd spent the majority of my career at Madison Square Garden, whether it was an intern, or full time. And, I really only knew one way to market because I'd been in that building for so long. So being able to travel with the Globetrotters, see how other buildings do it, different tricks of the trade.
What a crash course for you!
Yeah, no, it was a great experience. You know, unfortunately, there was a little bit of influx at the Globetrotters at that time, so I was only there for a season. And one of the, again, one of the shows that I had was at Meadowlands in New Jersey. And you know, as a kid, that'd been the building I'd gone to for Devils games, Nets games. You know, going back to the circus when I was a really little kid. You know, Giants and Jets games over at the stadium. And the person who was the marketing person over there, we were talking, and she had said, "You know, I'm looking to hire a marketing person. Would you be interested?" And we had actually, her and I had worked together at the Garden. So again, you know, just shows how important and how small this industry is. Ended up interviewing for the job and coming back. And, you know, for me, it was kind of a homecoming to be able to come to the state where I grew up in, to the building that I've been going to ever since I was very young. Was really just a huge opportunity. And it was also, too, at the time it was Continental Airlines Arena. Obviously, it's now switched to Izod Center, but it was also the stadium as well. So, you know, dealing marketing for concerts for, you know, 80,000, you know, people at a summer jam or something along those lines. So, you know, it was definitely a cool opportunity to, you know, kind of be on the other side of the ropes. You know, I definitely had always dreamed of playing for the Devils, and now I was, working in the same building with them. So, and then shortly after that, I probably spent about a year and a half, almost 2 years, back at the Meadowlands. Actually, maybe it was 2.5 years now that I think about it. But I got a very weird email from, at the time, the director of marketing at the Prudential Center, which was opening up in, you know, probably about 6 months. And it was literally a two-line email. You know, it was something along the lines of, "Hi, Will, do you want to work at Prudential Center? Thanks, Brian Gale." So I just assumed immediately by opening the email, I'd set off every alarm at the Meadowlands. But and obviously, they were going to be the biggest competition that we were going to have ever seen. So they were going to we would probably be splitting business. We'd lost the Devils. We were probably going to lose Seton Hall, which eventually did happen. So I just simply called them up and said, you know, "Hey, I'm not really looking for a position, but, you know, as an arena junkie, I would love to come and check out the building." So he was, you know, nice enough to let me come out there and check it out. It wasn't really an interview, but it was an interview. So it was one of those where, you know, I had limited expectations for it. And then, you know, as soon as I walked in there, I mean, that was the one thing. I walked into the building, no seats. You know, and that's one thing with my career to this point. I'd worked at Madison Square Garden, the Harlem Globetrotters, Giant Stadium, Continental Airlines Arena, the Newark Bears, all had great histories. You know, here is a building that doesn't even have seats, so they definitely don't have history. So, you know, as a marketing person, all these crazy ideas you want to try, or, you know, different things you want to you know, be a part of from the ground up. You know, a lot of stuff got, you know, held up because it wasn't the way we did things at the Meadowlands, or, you know, the Garden doesn't need to do this because, you know, you could get lost and get to 34th and 7th. So, you know, there was a little bit less creative stuff in here. It was like, you know what, to be a part of a building from literally day one, they don't have seats, so they definitely don't have a history. You know, kind of caught my fancy, and I was like, you know what, this is a pretty cool opportunity. So, they offered me the job. I ended up taking it and moved to the Prudential Center. Again, another two probably in change years at Pru Center, handling the events over there. We were bought out by the Devils. So AEG, which was the company I worked for, they were being bought out, and, you know, a lot of my coworkers ended up finding other jobs within AEG. I think AEG at the time had run something like 93 buildings. So, you know, people were getting scattered around. They were just opening a building in Beijing, so a lot of people had gone to Beijing. And my wife-to-be had just moved here from Florida. She was finishing up law school down there, so I didn't want to tell her, "Hey, we're on our way to Beijing." So I was fortunate that the Devils did offer me my position with their organization, and ended up staying there. And then they shortly hired Rich Creswick, who was a vice president of booking for AEG, as the president of Devils Arena Entertainment, to handle kind of the entertainment side of the Devils. So he promoted me to director of marketing for the team, and the rest was history. I ended up spending probably another 3 seasons there. Two of them, we didn't make the playoffs. One, we made the Stanley Cup, so it was kind of feast or famine while I was there, and stayed there. And then you know, that's kind of my foray into to social media. You know, he had come and said that we have to cut what we're spending. How can we do that? And we brought some smart people together, and we came up with a bunch of different ideas. And we came up with, you know, hey, if we can use this social media thing, you know, we've seen other teams like the Celtics being one of the first cut their budget significantly to the point where they weren't spending any money. So we're like, hey, you know, and at the time, I honestly didn't know much about social media. I had a Facebook page. I didn't even use Twitter. You know, I wasn't very familiar with it, but I knew there was obviously this was emerging technology, and it was something that everybody else was using. So I needed to be not only did I have to use it, but I had to be the best at it. So
it wasn't something that the Prudential Center had been using when you first jumped on board there.
You know, I did start all of their social media channels, so their Facebook, Twitter, all that stuff.
Okay.
But again, you know, I was using it poorly. You know, I wasn't using it to the social media. I was using it to help sell tickets, which again is, you know, part of anybody's plan. But it wasn't two-way communication. You know, it wasn't all the stuff that social media eventually, you know, became. You know, both for the Prudential Center and the Devils, but. It was one of those where I did start those pages and you know, put content on them, but you know, it was a portion of my day. It was also, you know, we were still doing other, you know, advertising and you know, putting together plans and stuff like that. So it was just a portion of it, but it wasn't to the extent that eventually it would become.
And the so-called epiphany came when you were the Devils.
Yeah, no, that's it was kind of an evolve or die. You know, I knew through the, you know, and at this point I'd been in the industry for over 10 years. So, you know, I knew this was something that was big. I knew, in fact, I remember the first time somebody showed me Twitter and I was like, boy, you know, this is going to change everything if this takes off, and, you know, it's now how I make a living. So, I mean, it was, you know, it was one of those things where I just, as soon as I saw it, I knew that this was going to be something where, you know, if we use this correctly, this could be huge. And obviously, you know, it'll help us sell tickets. It'll help us from a PR standpoint about putting out information. It'll help us from customer service, you know, dealing directly with the customers. You know, we could even eliminate the media to a certain extent, you know, being able to put out our own stories and, you know, publish our own stuff. So, I mean, the more that I experienced it, the more I fell in love with it and realized, you know, from a fan standpoint, this is phenomenal. But from a business standpoint, this is also great. So, you know, so, then, and that's kind of really where I made my name in the social media world was with the Devils. And, you know, again, too many people to credit. But, you know, we came up with the Mission Control and the Devils Army Generals and really got fans directly involved, you know, in what we were doing. And kind of changed the way social media was looked at, one from within the organization, but also within the industry. And I'll tell you, you know, it's amazing looking back now that week that Sports Business Journal put that story out and ESPN came and covered us and did all that stuff. You know, my phone literally was ringing off the hook from every team, league, you know, from here to Canada to everywhere else, you know, just asking what we were doing and how we were doing it. And you know, it's just funny to look back now. And even the Cleveland Indians, I you know, spoke to their social media person, and you know, again, don't want to take too much credit, but you know, I feel like I played some sort of role in their social suite. You know, them putting that idea together. So I mean, we were kind of walking down a path where we you know, we didn't know necessarily what we were getting into, but
If you could, for our listeners, can you give a quick, you know, 30-second synopsis of what Mission Control and the Devils Army Generals were?
Sure, yeah. I mean, Mission Control was basically our digital command center, and the Devils Army Generals were a select group of 25 social-savvy Devils fans, and that ranged from everybody to mom with three kids, you know, who all play hockey, and when she's not at a hockey rink, she's, you know, carting into a Devils game. To high school kids, to college kids, to, you know, we had one girl who at the time did not know much about the Devils, but she was a graphic designer, and Her boyfriend had Devil season tickets, so she thought it would be a good way to utilize her skills and learn a little bit more about the team. The person who handles social media for BMW, we had a nice array of the Devils fan base. So so we had them as part of kind of a, I don't want to say a consultant, but they were kind of a sounding board for us for different ideas and information.
Okay. Very cool. And so how did you end up then eventually getting coached by a neighboring team again, end up with the Mets?
Yeah, you know, I received, it's funny, somebody had forwarded the job to me, and I was like, you know, that's interesting. And before I could even apply for it, they had a an agency looking for the job, and they had reached out and literally called my phone within, I mean, I would say 15 minutes of me seeing the post. So, I mean, it was, the company had reached out and said they saw what I was doing and asked if I was interested. And, it was definitely something that piqued my interest, obviously, you know, growing up a Mets fan. And I think at the time I really didn't realize how big of a jump this would be. I mean, going from the Devils, which is, you know, a major team in, you know, the sixth borough of New Jersey. But, I don't think I fully understood the scope of it and how excited the fan base is. And you know, there was definitely some things that I learned along the way. But, yeah, they reached out and, definitely it was a job that they were actually had posted over a year ago. They were looking to try to find the right person. I'm very fortunate that they decided I was that person. But, so they reached out. I met with the agency, and then I met with the Mets, and once I went in and met with them, I just knew it was going to be the right fit. So the nice part about it was they had a good group of people that was kind of, they were kind of a social media by committee where they had a number of people from PR, some people from marketing, some people from other departments, community and stuff, all contributing to it. I think that's what made them successful was they had all of these departments kind of converging into one. But the negative was that they had all of these people doing the same thing. So, it's hard to have a steady voice. It's hard to build a brand when you have too many cooks in the kitchen. From the Devils, where it was kind of a build from the ground up versus, the Mets, they already had a great fan base. They already had, a lot of things they were doing well. It was just kind of coming in and being the quarterback of the situation.
So with the Devils, it sounds like social media was really something you helped develop and evolve there, whereas with the Mets, they already had a foundation, and you're brought in more to say, okay, we have our fan base, we're engaging with them to some degree. Now we need someone else to take it to the next level.
Yeah, no, that's exactly it. I mean, the Devils were definitely one of the late adapters, to social media, but when they did adapt, it was they were. They went full force, and I mean that's one of the things I'm most proud of. When we first started, we were 28th in the league in Cloud Score, and when I was there, when I left, we were number one. So to be able to engage our fan base, and see such a huge increase was obviously huge. The Mets, when I first got there, using just the same measurements, they were 16th or 18th, somewhere in there, Cloud Score. So right around, kind of the middle of the pack, and we've been improved to number two. So my boy Josh out in LA continues to do a hell of a job. So unfortunately, we haven't passed them yet. But to be up there with those teams, something that I think that we knew, or the people who had been there before me knew that they could do. Just they had a bunch of other stuff going on, so it's hard to devote the proper time and resources into social media, and obviously I had some background. I always joke with people, I'm no expert by any means. I just happen to know a lot about this. So the way things are changing, I'm still learning every day, which is exciting. And somebody who's been in the industry now for 12 years, to go in and not know everything is fun. Whereas when I was with Prudential Center doing marketing for the circus and Disney on Ice and concerts, it was kind of almost a little bit cookie cutter, where, you know, I knew what was going to happen. I knew how this was going to go. Whereas, you know, social media changes, you know, hour to hour.
So with the Mets, you talked a little bit about, obviously, improving the crowd scores. It shows a lot of things that you're doing right with their social media. But really, what were the objectives from day one from the folks that hired you? And how are you looking at it from day-to-day basis? Is it just, you know, is it more day-to-day things like increasing engagement? Is it increasing followers overall? Is it selling more tickets and coming up with a better overall strategy with analytics involved? And what's sort of your charge and what you're looking at from a strategic standpoint and what your position is really supposed to be trying to do for the Mets?
Yeah, no, I think you hit on the head. I think definitely, you know, those are obviously key factors of what we're trying to do. I mean, first and foremost, you know, was to build a voice. You know, we wanted to be one with the fans. I mean, I think that was one of the things that was not a major problem, but definitely something that was noticeable. There was a disconnect between the fans because you had so many people utilizing the channels. You know, there wasn't one voice. You know, the fan base maybe didn't feel as if the Mets as an organization were kind of in the same boat with them. They, you know, maybe they weren't as invested in the success or failure of the team,
right.
And you know, I think that was one of the key things. And you'll notice it now. I mean, we use we us on all of our social media channels. It's coming from the Mets organization.
Those little things go such a long way, too.
Yeah, absolutely. So I mean, that was it. And also too, I mean, because of people's game day responsibilities, they weren't always able to update during the game. So, you know, you'd have a bunch of great content leading into the game, and then all of a sudden, you know, 7:10 rolls around, and you don't hear from the team for another 2 hours, and you find out either they won or lost. So, you know, that was one of the things where I knew from the Devils that was when our fans were the most engaged.
Right.
They're watching what you're selling, so you know that's the time to take advantage of it. So that was something where we switched that quickly. Started it, and again, coming from hockey, I didn't know, I knew the formula very well for hockey. I did not know the formula very well for baseball, and you know, I appreciate the fans being patient during spring training while I figured out what was going to work with them. Because, you know, there was the first one, I'll never forget the first one, and I'm sure they won't either. But yeah, I mean, I was doing updates every half an inning, so was a little too much. But found something that did work, we have something that does work, and we're.
Tell us real briefly. Well, obviously with hockey, like you said, it's a little bit easier. You have goals, you have big saves, penalty, power plays, whatever. But for Major League Baseball, for yourself with the Mets, what is sort of the in-game? I don't want to say strategy, but game plan, I guess.
Yeah, now I'm giving away all my good secrets here, but no. Yeah, I mean,
share what you can.
Yeah, I mean, really what I focus in on, again, similar to hockey, we always had whatever the big moments were. So, you know, we're trying to keep you updated. I look at myself as a, you know, the poor man's Howie Rose or the poor man's Gary Cohen. I want to keep you updated. This may be the only source that you have in order to find out what's going on with the Mets. So, I obviously, you know, don't have the looks of Howie and Gary, and I could not articulate the way they do, and I definitely don't have the Mets history that they have. But again, that's really what the goal is. So, you know, we're not going to update every inning. We're not going to update every half an inning. I don't want to let you go 15 or 20 minutes down the road and not tell you something. So that's I kind of look at as kind of my shot clock of. If I haven't updated in like 15, 20 minutes, let me tell you what's going on just so this way you're kind of, you know, caught back up. But, you know, we look for big stuff, you know, big moments in the game. So obviously anytime we score runs, you know, anything, any milestones, any kind of information, you know, we'll share with the fans. And the same thing, you know, we won't update every half an inning, but if you know, pitcher has a strong inning, you know, we definitely want to share that. And there's a couple other things that we're trying to do during the game, you know, for engagement purposes. Since we know we have you there, you know, one of the big things that we've been working with is the Head and Shoulders does the WIF, the hashtag WIF campaign, which raises money for the local RBI program. So all the money raised does go back to help youth baseball. In New York, so in New York, New Jersey, and Connecticut. So, you know, it's one of those things where we know we have fans there, and, you know, it's a simple retweet. So, We'll have content like that, you know, scheduled. Again, we don't know when it's going to happen, but we're, you know, that's kind of stuff that we will put in there. So, we found that that works pretty well. The goal is to keep you informed. We want you to know what is going on. Again, if this is your only way of being able to stay in the know of what's going on with the Mets, I don't want to leave you in the dark. I want to kind of paint the picture. I'm probably just as excited as some of the fans. It's a lot of work, but it is, it's so much fun. I mean, there is, I get pumped up on a big home run and when we have a big inning, I want to enjoy it with the fans. I don't want to just tell them about it. I do want to be, one with them on that.
Oh, definitely. You hit on a couple of great points there. You know, one is to realize when your fans are most engaged and to capitalize on those moments, whether it is with a partnership activation or just a nice tweet. And also, like you said, to really mimic your fans. If your fans all of a sudden are very vocal, then it's probably a good time for the Mets to be vocal. But I think just overall with baseball, it's probably also important to know when your fans are going to be looking to Twitter more so for play-by-play or updates than otherwise. You know, maybe on the weekends they're more attending games or watching on television, whereas during the week, all 162 games over the course of the season, they're not going to be able to watch every single 12 o'clock game on a Wednesday, so that's when they may be looking to the Mets more for what's going on in the game. So I think it's really just, like you said, really looking to your fans to lead the way in that direction.
Yeah, definitely.
So we talked a little bit about your in-game strategy, but you also talked a little about developing the brand voice. So where does social media kind of fit within the Mets organization? Do you look at it as a first and foremost PR tool to help us define that voice, or are you guys also using it for direct marketing campaigns and trying to integrate it with what you guys are doing from whether it's a ticket sales perspective or a database building perspective? And you know, what are some of the ways that marketing and other departments touch with social media?
Yeah, I mean, I think it is when you have social media perfect, and we don't, and I don't know many people that do, but I think the perfect mix is when you have 50% marketing, 50% PR, and obviously that's a very simplistic way of looking at it, because there's so many other departments that do contribute to what we do now, from sales, marketing, PR, community relations, the players. So I mean, the minor league systems as well. So that is the super Cliff Notes version of it. But I think if you are providing fans with information and information that they're not getting from other sources, from the players and coaching staff and et cetera, that's what you want to do from a PR side, and that's what fans are looking for. But also to, you want to let them know about different opportunities for them to come out to the game or, where to watch and other stuff, again, to keep them engaged in the game and know what's going on. The number one reason why people don't attend events is because they don't know what's going on. So, it's definitely an important part of what we do. We do want to make money by selling tickets off of it. We want to get people out to the ballpark. But it's not our number one goal. Social media still makes up a very small percentage of our overall ticket sales. It is, it's a great opportunity for us to be able to one, get tickets into people's hands, but also, to share information. So, definitely the first and foremost goal is to build that community and keep that community of Mets fans. We want them to be engaged. We want to engage with them. We want to know what they like and dislike and, when they're happy and sad and everything in between. So that's, by far, definitely our number one goal. But at the same time, too, we do have to have some revenue attached to it. So, I'm very happy to say last year, what the organization did overall in an entire year, we've more than tripled that already. And I've only been here for 8 months. So, it was just something where, me focusing on it, knowing where to put things, that it could have been done by anybody, but I was fortunate to be the person in the right position to do it. So, the fact that it's my priority versus a second or third job for unfortunate people last year, makes that much easier, to increase those numbers, because again, we're changing very little things. I mean, it's not like, it's I'm not performing brain surgery over here. It was just focusing on knowing, okay, I've got a good pulse on the fan base, and now I can put different messages in different places, and take some of the stuff I've learned at previous places, at previous jobs, and expand those here. So definitely we want to sell tickets, we want to get people in the building, but social media is a social platform. If we don't have a community of people who are engaged with us and activating with us, then it's going to be very hard to try to get them to come to a game if they don't feel like they're part of the group.
Oh, very much so. I think, you hit the nail on the head there several times. It's just serving the fan base with and being engaging with them, getting them to trust your content, to anticipate your content. Then when you do throw out marketing messages, whether it's a ticket special or a bobblehead giveaway night, you are doing a service at that point. You're just like you're servicing them with information and engaging content. Not that surprising to see sometimes a fan saying, "Oh, thanks for telling me about this great deal. I just use it for my family," or something along those lines. So if you develop that more friendship relationship between the brand and the fan, then those marketing messages aren't just welcome to some degree more, but they're also more effective. Would you find that's relatively accurate, both the Devils and the Mets?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah, no, I agree wholeheartedly on that.
And how do you find the sort of the grind of the season, maybe, or does anything else overall that stands out that has differed between working in the NHL versus Major League Baseball?
Yeah, I mean, definitely from the baseball to hockey, our season would have been over by now. we're just about over. 162 games is a grind. I mean, I got to give these guys a ton of credit. We just finished up a 10-game homestand right before the All-Star break, and I was beat, and I'm tweeting. So I can't imagine if I was in the thick things, playing every day, and just a mental grind from the pitcher standpoint. Like, they pitch every fourth day, but there's so much going up there, and getting a chance to talk to these guys and know that they know the lineup inside and out, and they know that this batter, bites on this type of pitch, or this batter does this, or, just all the stuff that, that they know going into it. It's just unbelievable. But, the length of the season one of the things that I've noticed very quickly in my transition here. And one of the other things is Major League Baseball Advanced Media. That is a resource that hockey does not have. To be able to at any time, send an email saying, "Hey, I'm looking for a photo of Tom Seaver. I'm looking for this or that," or "Hey, can you help me with this?" or "Can you pull a winner?" From a lot of the contests and stuff like that. So, it's a phenomenal resource.
So what MLB AM does for you guys is pretty much a request for any type of media you may need, whether it's a video, a photo, a GIF, or any of those kinds of things, a Vine?
Yeah, absolutely. If I need a GIF, I just, simply send an email and say, can you turn this into a GIF for me? Can you, I'm looking for a photo from last night's game of so-and-so. Can you help me out with that? So, it's... we're a modest department, so to be able to have people working around the clock and be able to ask for just about anything, and bless them over there, they they're very quick to turn stuff around. And it's funny, if I don't get like a response in 10 or 15 minutes, I'll send a follow-up email, which seems absolutely ridiculous, because it's the amount of they're dealing with 30 of me, and I know a lot of teams do use them a lot more than I do. I do try to to be respectful of the fact that they are, I'm one of 30 to them. So, I don't want to, I don't want to annoy them too much, but I do request a lot, and I know there's teams that request even more than I do. So, but yeah, no, they're a phenomenal resource. Anytime I ask for anything, I get it very quickly, and a lot of times I don't even ask for stuff. A lot of stuff from the All-Star game, they were just sending it. Hey, I got a picture of Murphy, coming in the building. I got a picture of Mr. Met doing this. So whatever it was, I mean, that stuff was coming to me, and I was able to get it out quickly. So, I did not have to be there, and I was getting just as good a content as if I was.
And just the amount of content that you guys have from all the games you play every night, and the amount of content the MLBAM has from over the years, is so much you can possibly do and use over time on social. But before we get into this episode's shareable stat, Will, I did want to ask you real quickly, overseeing a team like the Mets that has such a huge fan base, really, not just in New York, but people throughout the country, throughout the world, transplant from New York who just grew up Mets fans, how do you sort of look at it day-to-day, or even from a broad strategy of who you're activating on social media, whether it is the local fans who are going to be watching SNY and going out to Citi Field versus the fans that are watching from abroad or supporting from other states around the country?
Yeah, as a Mets fan my entire life, I don't think I realized how big the Mets fan base is and how excitable and passionate they are. It's one of those things where, I definitely did not realize it until I actually got there and, started to see the at replies and to see, the fans, react to different things that I was putting out. So, it's, we obviously, focus a lot of our information on, stuff more geared for the local fan, so your tri-state area, even probably a little more specific to New York, but again, we're and more for me, I'm realizing that we've got fans international, we've got fans in different markets.
I can only imagine when Dice K pitches.
Yeah, I mean, he more than any other player gets a huge response on social media. So he's definitely one of our key players on social media, just strictly on the fact that he has such a huge following, from all over.
Oh, I bet. Well, we could talk to you all day. We'll really pick your brain all day with that broad fan base and New York Mets and all that. But we'll have a phone with you when we come back with our full count. We're calling our quick hitting questions today. But first, let's get to this episode's shareable stat. We'll be right back with that.
Well, really enjoyed chatting with Will, someone who has been in the sports and entertainment industry for several years, and someone who was really there at the ground level as this social media thing just started growing in sports and in venues as well. Was there with the Devils, there with the Mets, and as you guys heard, just a wealth of knowledge from Will. But we're going to have a little more fun with him as we come back with our full count, some quick-hitting questions for Will Carafello of the New York Mets. But before our full count, we have this episode's shareable stat. And this episode's shareable stat goes right along with our theme today of Major League Baseball as we look at the Major League Baseball All-Star Game and how it played out on Twitter. According to Twitter, there were 1.4 million tweets approximately sent out during the more or less 3-hour game by 544,000 unique users. Now you compare it to the World Cup numbers, of course, and NFL and other major sporting events, the All-Star Game falls way short. But to think about that there were 544,000 unique users, many of whom I'm sure were in the United States or the Far East as well, and they were all uniquely tweeting about the game. You didn't hear unique users numbers thrown out as much with the World Cup or the Super Bowl or more recent events as they played out on Twitter. But it's important to recognize, especially with Major League Baseball constantly being under scrutiny for having demographics that fall out that magic 18 to 49 age range, and more so in the old baby boomers 50 and up age range, which is not the sweet spot, so to speak, when it comes to social media. But what this episode's shareable stat shows is that While 544,000 people may not be an overwhelming number for a major national sporting event, it's a number that certainly is auspicious for Major League Baseball, in that there are young people on Twitter, there are younger people on Twitter that are still showing that they have an avid interest in Major League Baseball and want to talk about it with others. So take with it what you will. It might not be the most groundbreaking shareable stat, but 544,000 unique users tweeting around 1.4 million times during this year's Major League Baseball All-Star Game, to me, bodes well for the future of the game on social media. And I would expect, as the World Series comes up in a few months from now, and then next season to come, that the number of unique users tweeting about Major League Baseball on Twitter on any given day, let alone the big days, will continue to steadily rise, especially as Twitter continues to grow its influence over the international fan base, for which baseball has a pretty strong following. So, 1.4 million tweets sent out by around 544,000 unique users on Twitter during the MLB All-Star Game. That's this episode's shareable stat. We'll get some quick thoughts from Will on it after this, and then we'll have our full count. Some fun, quick-hitting questions with Will Carafello, Director of Social Media for the New York Mets.
All right, that was this episode's shareable stat. And it was looking at the amount of tweets and unique users who tweeted about the Major League Baseball All-Star Game. Over 500,000 unique users tweeting about the MLB All-Star Game. Is that about sound right to you, Will? Would you expect around 500,000 to 600,000, or were you looking for more or less there?
I would have hoped for more, but nah, it sounds about right. So, no, it was a great event. So, good to see that that many people were engaged with it on social.
Well, people always talk about the demographics of baseball and how it skews very old, but if you look at some of the ways that Major League Baseball is succeeding these days in social media, there are still a lot of fans out there and engaged fans that are following in the younger demographics. So I think 544,000 unique users is not bad at all.
No, I agree.
All right, Will, you survived your interview. Are you ready now to have some fun and engage in our full count?
Sounds good.
All right. We're going to have some fun here. Number one for you, Will Carafello, Director of Social Media for the New York Mets. The best part of being at a ball game, in your opinion?
Oh, wow. I might have to say two, but obviously the fans. I mean, we've started to use GIFs a little bit more. We've had a little more fun on social media. But, when a huge home run is hit and you put something out and all of a sudden you see those people, get excited about, what was put out, or obviously the moment as well, but when people are tweeting, they love the Mets social media, or you guys are fun, that is there's nothing that makes my day better at work. And then also I sit a couple of people away from Jay Horowitz and Ethan Wilson, who have been with the organization a combined 1.5 million years. So two fantastic resources, two guys who like to have fun as well. So being able to sit in the press box next to those guys, is truly an honor for a longtime Mets fan and somebody who does what I do. Definitely probably give the fans a little more of an edge just because, there's a lot more of them.
Very nice. Well, as much as GIFs and Vines have kind of given way to some meme type stuff, and obviously the creepy Marlins kid as well, it's also really given fans a way to see how much fun fans are having at the game, and really capture those few seconds of emotion after a home run is hit or after a big play is made. And I really think you speak to that there. That's really cool. All right. Yep. Number two for you, Will. You talk to some of these Mets players all the time. We know we know baseball is full of good, quotable guys. But tell us, who is the most quotable Mets player and why?
I got to go Vic Black. I think he uses the social media space very well. He loves the fans. He's quick to respond to them. Even today, he was looking for something to do in the city on an off day, and he was taking suggestions from fans and then going to them and sending the photos. So, he's smart. He gets it. He's really good. With that, I mean, if again, I hate to give you two answers, but Curtis Granderson and David Wright are so well spoken, and two people who are also fantastic. So, I think Vic Black has the most fun with it, whereas the other two guys are obviously, two fantastic players and intelligent to boot.
Very cool. And you definitely, for the guys that get it and play in New York, that can go a long way. That's for darn sure.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right, the next one for you, Will, and keep this this answer G-rated, please. So the difference between a Mets fan and a Yankees fan is blank.
Well, you know what? I don't know enough Yankee fans out there, so I will speak to the Mets fans. I have to say they are people of very high character. They are so passionate. They are just fantastic. I mean, they love us regardless, sometimes of the score and what's going on. So, it's just, I would say the Mets fans are a very high character group and they're very passionate. So I won't speak to the other fans, but, the Mets fans are great.
Very nice. And you got a little backhanded shot in there by saying you live in the greater New York area, but you don't know any Yankees fans. All right, number four for you, Will. This is a tough one here, but in 60 seconds or less, tell us, how do you define engagement and the ROI of engagement?
Whatever
your first gut is on this one.
I mean, obviously, engagement very simply is getting a response. So whether it's a favorite, a like, a retweet, or a share. I would put the highest value on a share or a retweet. When you put out content that fans say, I want to take that and put that on my channels. That's obviously the highest compliment that we can get. So I do look at those as high ROI for engagement. Obviously, any time that we can get fans to interact with us is fantastic. I would say when you put out content that fans are willing to put on their social media channels because they appreciate it that much is probably the highest return that we can get.
Oh, most definitely. I mean, to think about it, it's almost the equivalent of someone texting all their friends saying, look at what I'm seeing from the Mets right now on TV or something along those lines. It really does, spreading the word like you speak to, whether it's sharing or retweeting, it does mean something.
Definitely.
All right, I'm really looking forward to this one. We're seeing tons of ridiculous food items all around Major League Baseball these days. So tell our listeners the tastiest food item or items at Citi Field.
This is almost a no contest, but out in the Fan Fest area in center field there, you got Blue Smoke next to Shake Shack. You can't go wrong with a Shake Shack burger. If you're really feeling it, go for the double. But I will say for this year, at Box Freet's, the bacon cheddar fries, if you only have one thing at Citi Field, that is it. I've had it twice, and I've only eaten about a quarter of them. It's such a huge portion, and it's phenomenal. So if you do get out there, bring your appetite, little Shake Shack, bacon cheddar fries. I put my stamp of approval on it for what that's worth.
So a cheeseburger and bacon cheddar fries. So you guys are obviously catering to the Jewish fans out there with the kosher fare.
Absolutely, absolutely. There are kosher stands, but I don't believe those are sold at the kosher stands. So.
All right, well, this one I'll be having a little fun with number six for you. So we all recently saw 50 Cent sort of make the internet viral memes with all of his great stuff coming off his terrible first pitch. So tell us, besides that one, the most unusual ceremonial first pitch you've ever seen, and or the most unusual just pro sports promotion in general you've seen.
50 changed the game, not only for the hip-hop industry, but for the first pitch industry. I don't think we'll ever see anything like that again. So it's almost too hard to go past that, but definitely some credit to our minor league affiliate over at Brooklyn, who went all out with, they did Seinfeld night just a couple weeks ago. And, from Keith's Magic Loogie bobblehead To having the soup Nazi throw out the first pitch. I mean, they really cross their T's and dot their I's with all of the elements, even going to as far as changing the name of the ballpark for the night. So they did so many things with that promotion, and obviously got a ton of publicity. So I'll give them all the credit for that. I think one of the best promotions out there, and a close second has to go to the other single-A affiliate down in Savannah. They did Forrest Gump Night, which was filmed in Savannah, and they had an actor dressed like Forrest Gump throw the first pitch out, and the first 500 people in the ballpark also left with a box of chocolates. So, they had some fun with that as well. Some other promotions going on there, so...
Oh, I tell you, minor league baseball is just full of fun and creative promos out there. I love it. One last one for you, Will, before you get out of here. Let's say the Mets win the National League, definitely still in play for a playoff spot and can make a run. Let's hear your prediction. Who would they play in the World Series from the American League?
I know better than to pick your opponent, but there's so much talent out there, especially... in that AL West with Trout and Pujols down in Anaheim or LA of Anaheim or whatever they're going by now, California Angels I think they've been to. So between the Angels and obviously Oakland's a team you can't count out. Those are two teams that look like they are ready to make the next step. So if I had to take it right now, I would say it's a 1973 rematch and hopefully we come out with a better result than 73. I'd go A's.
All right, you survived your full count, Will. Now your chance, give us your social media all-star to follow. Someone out there on Twitter or a blog, wherever you may like, who they are and why they're worth following.
I'm going to give you two again. I hate to keep doing this to you, but... Vic Black, he's definitely great. He has fun. He's engaging. He retweets a lot of our content, which is always appreciated. So at Vic, V-I-C, underscore Black, underscore 2 is his handle. And, he's definitely a great follow. And show some love down to, Mr. Met. Also is pretty fun character as well. Just joined Twitter probably about 5 or 6 months ago, so right before the season started. And he's got over 19,000 followers, and he's got a lot of fun content as well. So keeping it in the family. But at Mr. Met, and also Mr. Met's on Snapchat. You can add Mr. Met on Snapchat with the same thing. It's just Mr. Met.
Oh, wow. I can only imagine the snaps he's sending out. How about yourself? Where can we find you as well as the Mets on digital and social media?
Yeah, I mean, the best place to get me is on Twitter, at Will Carafello, WILLCARAFELLO. That's probably, I have other channels, but if you're looking for me, that's probably the best place to get me. And the Mets, I mean, we're... Twitter at Mets, obviously on Facebook, Google Plus, Pinterest, all of those as well. But if you don't follow the Mets on Twitter, definitely a fun follow right now. So
I wholeheartedly agree. It's been awesome to see what you've been doing with the Mets since you got there, really giving them a voice and engaging with the fans to a greater degree than ever. And it's really cool to see what you're building there and to see it continue to play out the rest of the season. But thank you so much for being generous with your time. I know what a grind the season is, and you guys are right here in the thick of it. And we really appreciate you being on the podcast today, Will.
Thank you very much for having me.
And best of luck the rest of the season. I'll be rooting for you.
Thank you. We'll do this again when we're in the playoffs. How about that?
That sounds like a plan. I love it.
Thank you so much again to Will Carafello, Director of Social Media for the New York Mets. Just had a blast talking to him, getting to know about his extensive history in sports and entertainment, and his thoughts on what he's doing there with the New York Mets to really help them have a brand voice, something that he said was lacking before he arrived on the scene there at Citi Field in New York. So, thanks again for listening to this episode of the Digital and Social Media Sports Podcast. As always, I'm your host, Neil Horwitz. Follow me on Twitter at NJH287 and get more information and listen to previous podcasts on the website at www.dsmsports.net. All right, we'll see you guys all next time.